This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Americans now have a record high credit card and student loan debt, amounting to a total of nearly $3 trillion in 2018. What should you do to eliminate your personal debt and achieve financial freedom? Addressing financial issues can be confusing and certainly overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be a life sentence. Lifting the burden of debt is possible. It does require work and planning. So we're talking about some proven strategies for paying down debt. What are the most effective ways to manage what you owe? And what can you do to get started to get on that road to living debt-free? You can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980. Tell us your story. Did you become debt-free? How did you do it? Or are you in that situation where you're drowning in red ink and you'd love to be debt-free? You don't know how to get started on that. We'll tell you how to do that. Call in. Tell us your story. The number is 210-614-8980. And you can email us with your questions and comments to thesource at tpr.org. Tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined today with Beverly Herzog. She's a nationally recognized personal finance and credit card expert, author of multiple personal finance books, including The Debt Escape Plan and Confessions of a Credit Card Junkie. Beverly, it's great to have you here this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave. I'm delighted to be here.
Karen Denote is here. He's a department chair, professor of finance at the College of Business at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Karen, it's great to have you.
Thank you, David. I'm delighted to be here as well.
And Scott Jasik is going to be here with us this afternoon. He is the editor of Inside Higher Ed. He can help us figure out student debt problems. Scotty, there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Great to have you here this afternoon. So let me go first over to Beverly. You used to have a lot of credit card debt yourself, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I did, Dave. I had probably around $20,000 in debt. And this happened to me as soon as I got out of college. I started getting all these credit card applications, and I ended up with 7 credit cards and maxed them all out. And what's ironic is at the time, I also was a CPA. So I just didn't know much about personal finance. It isn't intuitive.
What did you buy? You know, what were you doing with all that credit cards?
You know,
just living the life?
Oh, yes. I was living very, very nice life for sure. Just a lot of designer clothes. Worked in an office, with a lot of men, and I felt like I needed, some power clothes to help my career, and just kind of went overboard with all of it. Took exotic vacations, I did not understand money management at all.
So you'd bought into the dream that I've got these credit cards. I've graduated from school. Let's just live the dream and not worry about paying for this. Tomorrow will take care of tomorrow. And then tomorrow got here and you saw yourself with $20,000 in debt.
Yes, that's exactly how this went. You know, when I first got those applications on the envelope, it would say things like, "You deserve this." And I would think, "Yes, I do." What happened was when I got to the point where I realized I was in this much debt, my credit cards got canceled, I decided to sit down and just stare down my debt and figure out how much I owed and come up with a plan. And I got out of debt in about 2 years.
Wow, 2 years. So what was the did you sell off things? What did you do?
One thing I did was I asked for a raise at work. And when that did not work, I got a new job that it was a promotion, so I got more money that way. And then I started combing through my budget and just started downsizing different expenses. I had been paying for this fancy health club, which nobody really needs. Okay, so I downgraded that expense because I do believe that when you're in debt, it's very stressful, and exercising and taking good care of yourself is very important so that you can make it through this. So I downsized that and just went to a local gym, ate a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for dinner, just really, really got on a strict budget, and that's what did it for me. And I used what I call a blizzard method, which is a combination of avalanche and snowball, where I paid off my lowest balance first for that quick, emotional adrenaline rush that you get when you accomplish something. And then I switched over to the highest APR and went down from there for each card. So I would save more money that way.
Yeah, we'll talk more about all these different things. We hear about the snowball, the avalanche, the snowflake, all these types of methods to try to attack your credit cards. But it's important that people realize that they can get their credit card debt under control, all of their debt under control. And Karan Benoit with the University of Texas at San Antonio Department Chair of Finance, the College of Business there, you know, do they live in a state of denial, you think, when it comes to this?
Before I go to that question, I want to address what happened with me when I graduated.
Oh, okay.
David, I was just talking to you that I think Beverly bought a lot of clothes when she graduated and built up her credit card debt. On the other hand, I had another situation. My son was born the day I graduated, and we went to the hospital, and of course, foreign student, no money, living on a teaching assistantship of a few hundred dollars. The credit card helped me pay for his visit to the hospital, get him treatment. So the reason I got into credit card debt was a little bit different. It wasn't consumption or using it to buy stuff, but to get treatment. But the method to pay it back was exactly what happened with Beverly. I went in, I was more disciplined. I kind of paid off a little bit every year. In 2 years, I paid off my debt. My son is 21, and he's graduating right now, and he has a job, so it was well spent.
So he can pay you back now.
He can pay me back now. So,
but that's an example of good credit card use.
Yes. So I think that it's important to kind of know when you're using the debt and why you're using it. And, of course, the mechanism for paying it back is exactly what was mentioned earlier, that you have to be disciplined, and you've got to use that money or you to use that incentive that you have to pay back this debt and see what more can you do. Take care of your health, work harder. And if you do it for the right reasons, it can actually spur you to do better. So I think there's a cost, but there's also a benefit of taking on debt. And I think that's important to see.
And then people have to have a very, have to be aware of their credit card situation, their entire debt situation, and where they are in paying those loans back, because the interest, that adds up.
That's exactly right. So if you're doing it for the right reason, then it's okay. But if you're going to go out and buy yourself a fancy car when you graduate and take on debt, be it auto loans or credit card debt, and you go to a fancy restaurant, then it's clearly not investment, but consumption. And that's where you have to have self-control, be careful that you don't get into that kind of a habit.
And keep aware of... They don't even open up their credit card bills. They just throw it in the corner.
That's right.
So you got to be aware. So we're going to talk about all of this. We're going to talk about higher education, the cost of higher education, student loans. I'm sure, Karan, you took out some loans. We're going to hear about Beverly's story and hear about from Scott Jasek with the editor of Inside Higher Ed about the situation with student loans in America. Got some callers. We're going to get on the board as well. The number is 210-614-8980. As we talk about debt in America, how to dig yourself out of that debt hole, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about debt, personal debt. It's adding up here in America. It's becoming to the record high, $3 trillion in 2018. What does that mean for the nation? What does it mean for you individually? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And Claudia is on the line. And Claudia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning, or good afternoon. I had a question. I have two sons, an 8-year-old and a 1-year-old, and my husband and I are in our 40s, so we kind of have a pretty good grasp on our finances. But we've been looking for literacy courses, financial literacy courses for our children, the 8-year-old specifically, because he's having a hard time with the concept of saving. Not having a whole lot of luck for resources throughout the city. Does your panel have any guidance on that, on avenues to pursue for kids? I want to get them on the right track with their finances. So.
Wow, Claudia, thanks for calling in. Beverly Harzog, you deal in financial literacy, but even at age of 8 years old, you think that's it's never too early to start?
No, Dave, I don't. In fact, I applaud the caller. I think it's wonderful that she's thinking about this. You know, one thing I would recommend, because an eight-year-old is going to have a whole lot of patience for like a literacy course or anything too structured. But as you go to like the grocery store, you know, talk to your son about how much things cost and what let him watch you go through the payment process, explain how your credit card works if you're using that. Just kind of give him an idea with just through everyday living. Just make a point of talking about when you spend money and when you have to pay bills. And when the bills come, you know, show them the bills. Just don't overwhelm them at this age. But I love it that you're doing this. And, you know, with an allowance, you can also, you know, help him decide, okay, we're going to put a third into savings, maybe a third to give away to charity, if that's what you like to do, and then maybe some left over to spend. So you can kind of guide him through that with his allowance and through your everyday living and just the way you spend your money.
All right. And so, and Karan, any ideas about local programs for kids?
I think that's a great idea. We've been thinking at UTSA, we've been thinking of going to local schools and having some kind of financial literacy program. We haven't implemented that. But I just want to add another thing. What I did for my daughter when she was in, I think when she was 10 years old, we went to our local bank, Broadway Bank, and I hauled her in and gave her $25, and we opened an account there. Ever since that time, she often goes to Broadway Bank and she wants to know what's the account balance. When I give her an allowance every month, she will say, okay, Dad, I want to save $10 and spend $10. So it's not only the financial literacy program that would be helpful, but I think just going to a bank and knowing what saving really means and just going through the process really helps as well. Right. But I think the idea of a literacy program is good, and we've been exploring that here.
And the financial literacy program I got when I was a kid was my mom yelling at me and telling me that we're poor. We are poor. Don't you get it? We are poor. We cannot get you those things. So I don't know if that's a good way to do that or not. But let's go to another caller. This is John. And John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you, sir?
Great. John, go ahead.
So I had a question. I know one of the guys that you have on there is deals with student debt. And I attended a for-profit college. By the time I was done with my bachelor's of science in psychology, and I ended up about $80,000 in debt through this for-profit college. With a degree that you know, it really wasn't applicable to get a to be placed in a job that would that could ever pay that back, you know, in any short amount of time. So I ended up being on the through Fed loan on the income-driven repayments, and you know the way I see it or the way it's structured, I'll never, you know, it's about $94,000 now. It was $80,000, and it's overall about 6% interest. So it just grows and grows and grows, and it's just, you know, it's almost exponential. And I was wondering if they could give me any insight into how to get control over that.
All right, John, thank you for the call. Scott Jasek is with us. He's the editor of Inside Higher Ed. Can you, you know, come up with some sort of help for John?
Sure. I'm going to have a tough time for John, but I can help people prevent have that happening to them. It's important to know that the average four-year degree of a borrower in American higher education is about $29,000. So I would say anyone who's being told they need to borrow $80,000 to earn a bachelor's degree, you need to look for another institution. That is way too much. I think income contingent, income linked loan repayment may well be helpful, but the important thing here is not to rule out all borrowing. A lot of people make money off of the investment they make in going to college and borrowing to pay. But you need to look at how much. And $29,000 just should, or $80,000 just shouldn't happen, period. Then you need to look at other things to minimize debt. It's a key thing is graduating in 4 years or as soon as possible. That is one of the best ways to manage debt. The other thing is, I am guessing that the caller took out private loans, not just federally backed loans. There are far fewer protections, higher interest rates. So I would strongly advise people to avoid colleges where they can't use only federally backed loans and where they're borrowing that much money. It is just not going to end well.
Well, so, but for John, his situation, you know, owing all that money, 6% interest, I think he said, that's just, that's an incredible thing to be, you know, a burden to be carrying. What can, is there any relief for someone like that? I know that there's been some programs.
There are some programs, and I would certainly look for programs that relate to the income you have. But again, there are limits on what you can do if you've borrowed that much. I don't mean to be not helpful to John, but I am much more worried about the people
sure.
who haven't borrowed that much, who need to not do that. People are making that decision to borrow that much every day, and those are the ones I really want to help.
Sure, but haven't some of these for-profit colleges been labeled as predatory, and they have?
Absolutely, and in some cases, there's debt relief. Now, the Obama administration provided a lot of debt relief for certain colleges that were found to engage in predatory behavior. That's not all for-profit.
But you should check it out.
Cut that back. You should absolutely check that out. It may depend on particularly if your for-profit went under.
All right. So if it was one of these name brands, I don't want to name them out right now, but he needs to take a look at these things. Is there anyone out there who can help him, a counselor maybe?
I would certainly look to a counselor, but it really depends. Again, I don't want to get into the names, but is it a for-profit that has since gone under? Is it a for-profit that has since been found guilty of inappropriate recruiting practices? Those debts from those colleges are more likely to be forgiven than others, and there's lots of for-profit colleges out there.
And there were a lot of red flags in his story about racking up $80,000 in debt for a degree that doesn't provide that much income. That's a typical story.
Yes, that is sadly a typical story of many. And again, to those who haven't borrowed that much, I would just and some people borrow that much to attend nonprofit colleges. I wouldn't advise anyone to do that either. There are options that cost less and where the borrowing is all through federally backed programs. It's hard to borrow $80,000 for a degree without going to the private lending market, which is where the debts tend to be much worse.
Okay, now let's go over to Beverly Herzog, and she's a nationally recognized personal finance expert. How would a person deal with this type of situation? They can't walk away from it, right? They have to own it.
Right. You know, I mentioned earlier that when I was in debt, I stared down my debt, and that's what you have to do. And it sounds like John has done that. So that's great. You've accepted what's happened, and you're just looking for some solutions. You know, I would check out refinancing, you know, if it's at all possible. I know my daughter did that with her student loans, and she saved a lot of money that way. So check into that. And you know, my rule of thumb when it comes to borrowing money for school is that you shouldn't pay, you shouldn't have loans that exceed what you can make in your first year, you know, when you're working. But for John, I think your best bet right now is just to look into some refinancing, get online, compare rates, get some information. You know, I'm a consumer finance analyst for U.S. News and World Report, and we have a lot of companies that we've analyzed that refinance student loans. So that might give you a good starting point there.
And you should do that now because interest rates ticked up a little bit. They look like they're going to continue to go up, but now we're looking at a global economic slowdown. So I don't think interest rates are going to go up much more than we have right now. So Karan, what do you think?
So I think there is two ways to do it. And our experts have given some idea on how to reduce debt. what I would urge John to do, as well as to look at the other side, which is with his degree, how can he add to it to maximize his potential? So not just get consumed by the fact that he has debt, which is important to address and work down, but also not lose sight of the fact that he already has this degree. Now, what are the opportunities out there that will allow him to maximize his potential? So work on both sides. Look at how to reduce debt and look at how to maximize your potential as well. I know that that is not easy. And so to the extent that your area can be married with analytics or some other skill set that might allow you to get a better paying job, don't lose sight of that. And that'll allow you to do both the things, that is pay down your debt and take control of your life.
Scott Jasek with Inside Higher Ed, how many people out there have that problem that they borrowed way too much for their higher education and now they are saddled with that and they're having trouble paying it back?
Tens of thousands of people. This is not a rare problem. But one of the things I worry about is there's also a lot of evidence that some students are saying, I won't borrow anything. Modest debt frequently is a very smart decision, particularly if you are going into a lucrative field, a reputable college program to help. If you have to borrow $5,000 to earn a nursing degree, you're going to do very well with that degree if it's from a good college and you pass your licensure test. So I actually worry, while people should absolutely be warned that they should not be borrowing $80,000, borrowing $10,000 might be the smartest thing that somebody has ever done for themselves financially. If they graduate in 4 years, if they have a plan to repay it, if they've thought about the consequences of the debt. I think one of the big problems, and this relates to the financial literacy issue, is that many 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds don't have a clue what the student loan means. And frankly, their parents don't either, because U.S. adults are not very good at this. Good colleges will provide good advice. So for instance, we wrote about a college that if you want to change majors, they make you do a financial plan, because many times changing majors may mean you're not going to graduate in 4. It could be 5 or 6. Figuring all this out on the going in, maybe for some students attending a community college for 2 years and then earning a bachelor's degree from a 4-year college, avoiding situations to borrow too much is in fact a live option. But I think too many don't do that.
All right, we're talking about debt, the national debt problem that we have for households across America. It's a growing problem. People are shifting their household expenses to credit cards. They're finding themselves in trouble with that because of the rising cost of living and stagnant wages. How can we pay that down? We're looking at it as individually and as a whole. It's a national issue. What do you have to say about that? Tell us your story. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We've got some calls on the board. We'll get them on the air when we come back from this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Are you drowning in red ink from credit cards, student loans, medical bills, and upside-down mortgage? Well, you are not alone, but there are many ways that you can dig yourself out from all of that debt. Other people have done it. You can do it, too. There's some help out there to help people get control of that debt bomb. Give us a call. If you've got a question or comment, 210-614-8980. Let's get Mark on the air. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks for letting me share my story. Some life circumstances brought me from the 1% to below poverty line real quick, and I had trouble adjusting my spending, and I ended up with $30,000 in credit card debt. And I just want to let people know that there's hope, but it's not an easy road. People tend to look for an easy road. I thought about filing bankruptcy. Unfortunately, I had, you know, people to help talk me out of that. The other thing that really helped is I negotiated with the credit card companies a payment plan, which brought that debt down to 1 or 2% interest instead of the normal, you know, super high APR. And so, you know, I just started living within my means, cooking at home, living on a super tight budget. And it took 5 years, but now this January, I just made my last payment. I'm debt-free. I have a high 700 credit score, and it is possible, but it's a deep hole. First, you got to stop digging, and then, you know, start, you know, getting your way out of there. So,
wow, Mark, congratulations. Mark, so what was your moment of clarity? When did things start looking like I've got to get this together?
You know, you can keep paying the minimum payment on credit cards for a while and let it build. But really, you know, once I, you know, started to max those things out and to realize, like, you know, I'm not going to come upon, you know, some windfall. I really thought that, you know, life would, you know, somehow magically work itself out. But it, you know, it doesn't work like that sometimes. So really just facing that super high, you know, that super high debt, the inability to repay, you know, back quickly made me realize, you know, I need to make some serious adjustments. So.
Did you do any of those things like a debt snowball or all that?
No. So one card was like $20,000. The other was $10,000. And really, I didn't have the means to, you know, pay one of those off, you know, really quick to give me momentum. It was really just a, you know, kind of a bootstrap kind of thing. And, you know, some hard conversations with family. Because if you're irresponsible with your money, you know, family doesn't want to lend you any money to help pay that because you've already shown
that you're not responsible.
That you're irresponsible. So
yeah.
Really, I just had to, you know, buckle down and focus and realize that, you know, you need to live within your means. If it's not in the bank, don't spend it.
Mark, thank you for the call. Beverly Harzog is with us. She's a nationally recognized personal finance and credit card expert. She's written multiple books, including The Debt Escape Plan and Confessions of a Credit Junkie. So, Beverly, you heard Mark's story. He was able to get it under control. You got it under control. I'm sure you've met many, many people who have. What do you think finally kind of gets people to realize this, to take action?
That's a great question, Dave. And I think it's going to be kind of different for everyone. Everybody has that rock bottom moment where they realize, oh my goodness, my life is financially out of control and I need to fix it. And once you reach that point, and like the caller, Mark, who has amazing clarity on everything that's happened here, that's great. Once you have that clarity, you can come up with a plan of action. And yes, getting out of debt is hard work. It's emotionally draining. But you know what? Once you get started, you will start to feel an adrenaline rush. I'm telling you, it's hard to get started, but once you get going and you start, you know, knocking down that debt, you're going to be very excited about this. And that kind of motivates you to keep going. So that's what happened for me. And I think that that's what happens with a lot of people as they start to try to pay down that debt.
And people need to recognize that this is something that they have control over. They need to give themselves a little reward, a pat on the back, a little happy dance when they pay off a bill on time. And that makes a big difference, believe it or not, that little shot of dopamine into the brain that they're doing the right thing. Let's go. What is, Beverly, what is the snowball? We've mentioned that a couple of times.
Sure. Yes. The snowball is where, okay, you line up your credit cards, make a list of your credit cards, the balances, and you start with the smallest balance and you work your way up to the largest balance. Now, the psychology behind this is that you're going to knock off that first account quickly, and that's going to keep you motivated and you're going to keep going. The downside of the snowball is that you end up paying more because you're not doing it according to APR. With the avalanche, you start with the highest APR and go down to the lowest. So you save the most money with that. But you know what, Dave, the right decision, the right choice for your debt reduction strategy is for you only to decide. Whatever works for you is the one you should choose.
Now, the caller, this is Juan. Juan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, well, thanks for having me. So I currently in about $20,000 in a credit card debt. And just, you know, different credit cards. So my question is, I know there's like programs out there where I guess a company will buy the debt from you and you consolidate it to one payment. So you, instead of, you know, having all these payments, you just make that one payment. And I was just wondering, you know, the thoughts on that and if it's a good way to handle the debt.
All right, let's go to Karan Dunote. He's the department chair, professor of finance at the College of Business at the University of Texas, San Antonio. How does that work?
So Juan, if you've been listening to the program, I just want to take you back to the previous caller, Mark, who talked about a high amount of credit card debt and how he called up the credit card company to renegotiate some payments. I'm actually much more comfortable with that. And the basic idea there is that you are incentivized to reduce your debt, and you're going to make some changes in your life and discipline yourself to pay it down. The credit card company, on the other hand, knows that if you were to default or not pay up, they would lose the entire $20,000. So they are willing to work with you and get you on some payment plan so you maybe the rate is lower and their recovery, how much they get back, is going to be higher than if you were to just simply default on your debt. So I would say that the first thing you do is to work with the guy who has lent to you. Because once you go and consolidate that debt to another lender, they're going to have their own rules, and maybe you're not going to be able to pay up as you could have earlier, but you to negotiate good terms with the lender initially. And it really depends. Maybe consolidation might be good at times if the rate is lower, the terms are better. But I would say it's better to work with the credit card company, like the example Mark had given earlier, if you were listening to the show.
Beverly, aren't there some people out there who claim to be credit card counselors who are predatory individuals themselves?
Oh, yes. I mean, that's definitely something you have to watch out for. There are a lot of scams out there. And if you think about it, you know, when someone is feels like they're financially drowning, they are very vulnerable. They want a lifeline. So if somebody, you know, if you see a company, you know, come on TV, an ad that says, we'll fix your credit for you in 48 hours, you know, that is not going to work. Right? There are all kinds of scams out there. So you do have to be careful. Now, the caller asked about debt management plans. And if you go through an accredited credit counseling agency, they can discuss it with you. You get a one-hour free phone call just to discuss, you know, what it's about and what they can do for you. But I recommend the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. That's nfcc.org. That's a place to start if you feel like you're drowning and your income does not support any way that you can see to pay off your debt. I would start there. There's always help out there.
Scott Jasek, editor of Inside Higher Ed, can you consolidate or negotiate lower payments on student loans?
There are several consolidation offers, and again, this is, whether they make sense is going to vary by person and by how much non-student loan debt they have. But I guess I would offer, in addition to the encouragement that it's good, I also think people need to think about sort of the timeline of their lives. According to a recent study, there are 2.8 million people in the United States over the age of 60 with student debt, and that has quadrupled in the past few years. One reason you have to minimize debt and get debt under control is, you know, after you leave college, you hope perhaps in a few years you're borrowing for a mortgage, but then eventually you're hoping to pay for retirement. People need, something is wrong with the situation when people in retirement are repaying their student loans. Frankly, on credit card debt, just don't do it. I fear that people, I hope people don't just get the message of how to get out of it, although obviously lots of people need to do that. The single most important thing is don't take on credit card debt, unless if it's a health emergency, I understand. But that's never a wise way to finance pretty much anything.
Let's go to Annette. Annette, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Arnette, I'm sorry.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, hi, Arnette. You're on the air.
Yes, I was calling because my son graduated from Le Cordon Bleu. Mm-hmm. And he, when he finished, he has his associates, but Le Cordon Bleu in Austin, it closed, and he has a debt of $42,000 that he needs to pay back, and he's not making enough to support himself with his regular bills and pay back the loan.
That's like a cooking place? You became working to be a chef, is that?
Yes.
Okay, all right, Arnette, thank you for that. Scott Jasek, with the editor of Inside Higher Ed, there's a lot of people out there who took a lot of money to become chefs, and they realize working in a kitchen doesn't pay a lot of money.
Correct. Although, but see, here's what's, while that had a fancy name, hospitality management, including cooking, is generally a growth industry. But you know what? Community colleges offer programs in it. that have good graduation rates and for which cost a fraction of what other programs cost, meaning it would be possible to borrow relatively little or none and to earn a degree. Again, if the average debt for a four-year degree is just under $29,000, no one should be borrowing $42,000 for an associate degree. And to me, again, just people shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
And there are great career-oriented programs in hospitality.
Sure, like here in San Antonio, St. Philip's College, great program. You can learn everything you need to learn in an institution like that. We're going to take a break. The number is 210-614-8980. The Source continues talking about debt right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. If you're in credit card debt and you're tired of being told all you need to do is give up your daily latte and cut up your credit cards, well, maybe this is the conversation for you, because it doesn't have to be that way. There are lots of ways to come up with a debt escape plan, but you don't have to, you know, become one of these hermits or something and live life like extreme poverty. There are ways to do it. People out there who want to help you. You can call in right now with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980. Adam is on the line. Adam, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Adam, go ahead.
Hi. Hi. First off, thanks for having this conversation. It really helps. I wish I would say that it was credit card debt, because I feel like it would be potentially easier, but it's not. Mine is, I got in the unfortunate payday loan debt cycle, and I'm continuing to find that I have to essentially pay it off to take another, so that way I can maintain the household. And when I look at all of that, and frankly, I have three payday loans, and it's all on my stupidity, quite frankly.
You didn't know.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you know, I'm now trying to realize, okay, how do I get out of it? And then I'm paying, I kid you not, in interest, it's one's 150%, one's 200-something%, and I'm paying a month just in payday loan debts close to $2,000. And fortunately, I have income to where I have a little bit left after that, but it's just so difficult to get out of this cycle, and I'm trying to see if there's any advice of, obviously, stop getting the loan, but, you know, we've cut cable. We don't have that anymore. We've cut here. We've cut there. We've cut eating out. Now we eat pretty much nothing but at home. So we're doing things that help add to the bottom line. It's just, I don't know if there's anything else out there, because I've called credit counselors, and they basically tell you we really can't do anything with that.
And so, Adam, is there ways that you can add to your income? Can you drive Uber or something like that on weekends?
You know, I've looked into that. What I haven't looked into is the associating cost with insurance, because I'm assuming that would have to change for the vehicle. So I've started to, but I haven't. I know we've even looked at, well, what don't we need around the house, that I could either have a yard sale or a, you know, put it on whatever website to sell. So we've looked at those things. I'm just not sure if there's anything else that anyone's possibly seen or thought of.
All right, Adam, thank you for the call. Beverly Harzog, you know, payday lending, is this something that shows up when you talk to people who are underwater?
Oh, absolutely. And Adam, I feel your pain. I do. I understand this terrible cycle, but don't beat yourself up, because this kind of thing can happen to anyone. You really don't know what you're getting into up front with those payday loans. And once you get into that cycle, it is indeed hard to get out of it. You know, I like the idea of doing something that increases your income a little bit. I mentioned debt, you know, management plans earlier, but that's mostly just for credit card debt. And you were correct. You probably have more options if it was credit card debt. So I think your best bet right now is to try to get some extra income somehow. And you might be able to get some sort of personal loan, you know, with a lower interest rate. There are some options to consider, but right now I would just focus on trying to get a little extra income first to see if you can pay that down.
When you go to a payday lender, what a lot of people don't realize is that there are all of these fees that are going on behind with the payday loan. And they start paying off what they think is what the loan is, and then they realize those are just the fees, and they still have got to get to the loan, which has been accumulating interest all along. So there's a lot of lot of stuff going on that's very difficult, and and people say payday lending is predatory. So, Corinne Benoit, any advice?
I don't know the entire situation, but if you're paying 150,000, 150% of the amount you took in, that means the lender is clearly making much more than what he should, given that there's some chance you're going to pay back. So there ought to be someone else who's willing to lend you at a better rate. Even a credit card rate is better than that. So I'm sure there are some options there. I don't know the entire situation. And I do like the idea of the other side of your balance sheet, which is building up some revenue, possibly by Uber or something else. And in the meanwhile, taking a loan at a better term, maybe a personal loan, and paying this off right away.
Let's go to Scott S. Scott S., welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Great. Thank you. I'm a business member, TPR, and longtime listener. Great show today.
Thank you.
Hey, just a couple things real quick. My profession is a realtor, and I see oftentimes many people in credit situations. But uniquely so, I had a client that was a lotto winner about 4 or 5 years ago, and the saying is true that 4 years later, they're right back where they started. And I tried to encourage him to wisely use his credit. He had bought several investment properties, all with cash from his winnings, and then just burned through everything else that he had, and then having to sell his properties later. They all sold at a profit, and he had cash flow up to that point. But he put himself in such a situation where it was no longer viable to maintain the properties anymore. And then just one other thing, and I'll listen off the air, but going to the education tools for children, I did this with my own kids. It's a game called Cash Flow. Your guests might be familiar with it. Robert Kiyosaki, the guy that did Rich Dad, Poor Dad, came up with it before he wrote his book, and it was a really big eye-opener for my family and me. So thanks for having me on, and I'll listen on the air.
Scott S., thank you for the call. Appreciate that. So debt and borrowing, you know, we don't want to make these things like it's absolutely a bad thing. So, you know, if we didn't have debt, most people wouldn't be able to have houses. And you can borrow money in order to buy more property, and hopefully that's investment property. So, Corinne Benoit, you know, borrowing money can be a positive.
Yes, and that's how we started the discussion. There is a cost that if you're not disciplined, you might consume more, you might buy things you don't need, you might go bankrupt if you borrow too much, but there's a benefit. It allows you to invest. You got a new job, let's say, and you need a car to drive to work. Instead of walking, you can buy a used car. If you buy a Cadillac, then there's a problem. You could get a tax benefit if you borrow and not put in equity, that means your own savings, and that could reduce the cost of borrowing. It allows you to be disciplined and save by investing upfront. So there are benefits and there are costs,
right,
and it's important to trade them off.
Scott Jasek, editor of Inside Higher Ed, a borrowing for an education, you know, that needs to be done wisely. People need to investigate. They need to figure out how much they think that degree is going to get them so they can pay off that debt in a timely way.
Absolutely. It's not that all that is bad, but where are you going? How much are you borrowing? I feel so sad when I hear the stories about how much people are borrowing for degrees that aren't getting them anything. There are options out there of less expensive community colleges, other institutions. People just should not be borrowing as much as they are for questionable credentials.
There's also a lot of grants and fellowships out there that people need to investigate.
Absolutely. It is, if you're starting with loans, or if you're starting with what's known as gapping, when they say you can come, but the money they're outlining for you doesn't add up to full cost. You need to ask how much will books cost. If you're traveling, how much will it cost to get to campus? All of these need to go into your budget to figure out, is a place affordable for you? And borrowing modest sums can be really smart. Borrowing of the sums that we've been hearing about today is rarely a good option.
Right. Okay, last caller. This is Will. And Will, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I just wanted to give some encouragement to those people out there. I just got done paying off my student loans, about $40,000 in a year and like 3 months. And so I just wanted to give like kind of a success story and tell people out there, like, you just gotta, you know, buckle down, maybe not go out to eat so much, you know, you just keep going at it, keep chipping it away. And like, I just feel so relieved now, of just like not having that burden anymore. And, you know, it was tough. It was, you know, kind of pinching pennies here and there, but just cranking it out was really awesome. And now I'm like, done, let's move on.
All right, Will, you're a winner. Thanks for calling in with that boost. Beverly Harzog, people call in and are saying they're not eating out as much anymore. What's wrong with eating at home? I mean, I think the food's better at home. You know, that's people don't know how to cook anymore. Is that the problem?
You know, that might be part of it. I also think that when people are working hard, you know, they want to go out at the end of the day rather than go home and cook. But yes, I mean, I know that one of my biggest budget busters is eating out. So I am very careful about this. I track my spending. I use mint.com, but there are many, many other options out there. So I always track how much I'm spending when I eat out. I cook more. And, you know, there's also, I believe, a connection between eating more at home and maybe even decreasing your medical expenses, you know, down the road because you're eating, you know, healthier food. So, you know, that's one way you could cut back on your budget. And, you know, that could also help you, you know, in other areas of your life.
And what's one thing that someone can do to debt-proof their future? One thing.
Tracking your spending. As I just mentioned, you track your spending. You have to have a budget, track that spending, and make sure that you come in under your budget numbers every single month. Your goal is to never carry a credit card balance. Use credit so you build a good credit score, but pay it back in full by the due date.
All right. Beverly Harzog is a nationally recognized personal finance and credit card expert, author of multiple personal finance books, including The Debt Escape Plan and Confessions of a Credit Junkie. Also with us today, Corinne Benoit, he's department chair, professor of finance at the College of Business, University of Texas at San Antonio. One quick thing to debt-proof your future.
I think I just want to harp on being disciplined and making sure that you know how much you're getting and how much you're spending every
month. All right. And Scott Jasek is with us, editor of Inside Higher Ed. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.